Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday to you. Brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jaguars Today on the air here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, getting ready to blow this popsicle stand, baby, in less than 48 hours,
yes,
Tony.
Yes, we are.
We'll be in the air. I surmise either that or we'll be on a layover somewhere at this point on Sunday morning. The wee hours. We'll be wings up, wheels up, and getting the heck out of Dodge, heading out to Phoenix for Super Bowl 49, mm-hmm. where half the week will be spent talking about the game, half the week will be spent talking about are the Patriots dirty, rotten cheaters. Or are they still dirty, rotten cheaters? Are they worse dirty, rotten cheaters than they've ever been?
I will say this. The whole situation is obviously a little bit absurd. You know, it's funny that we've been talking about deflated footballs for almost a week now. I don't think the story, that means that the story isn't an important story given the history of the New England Patriots, and that as the story continues to develop, that we shouldn't be following it. But in the end, we are talking for 5 days now about deflated footballs in the NFL while we're a week away from the Super Bowl. And keep in mind, the New England Patriots went into the Super Bowl against the New York Giants at 18-0. That week, Super Bowl week, is when Spygate broke.
Yes.
And they can say it wasn't a distraction for them. It didn't affect the way they played that game, blah, 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 blah. That was a team that was steamrolling guys for most of that season, and they lost at 18-0 in the Super Bowl. So they can't say, we can't say for sure that it didn't have an effect on Belichick and Brady.
Well, it can't help. It can't help when you're being asked constantly about all these other things and people are questioning, you know, your integrity, your reputation, all this stuff. I'm not saying it necessarily hurts. The Patriots, too, you remember, Tony, they struggled with the Giants in the regular season finale.
They did.
Right? I mean, that was a back and forth, like 35-31 kind of game, 38-35, something in that range.
Yeah.
The Jags went toe-to-toe with them, at least for a half, in the playoffs. I mean, so they were not necessarily at their peak at that point, but I'm not trying to say they would have lost regardless.
Sure.
We don't know. We just simply don't know.
And who knows when the NFL started having a conversation with the Patriots and said, hey, we've heard about blah, 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 you know, what exactly happened with that. Now Belichick's going, oh, my gosh, are we really going to have to deal with this? And who knows when they started having that conversation. We know apparently they haven't started having the conversation with the Patriots yet about Deflategate. Are you serious? They haven't talked to Tom Brady?
Who are they talking to? Who are they investigating? What is the investigation included if there hasn't been a conversation with the quarterback who is, now, where the focus seems to be shifting? Now, let me say a couple things. Let me just set the table for you before we get any deeper into this. Today, well, Brian Sexton's going to join us, fresh back from Mobile. Got a chance to talk with both Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell at various points throughout the week. You can see some of those conversations are posted on Jaguars.com. You can listen in if you haven't already. We'll get Brian's take on things from a Jag perspective, coaching the South team, as well as some of the prospects that stood out to him, the recent hirings to the offensive side of the coaching staff, all that coming up. John Osier wrapping up the week as well. We're hopeful to catch up with the senior writer from Jaguars.com a little bit later on the show. But, you know, already, the fan feedback question today, Tony, we asked, in regards to their comments yesterday, where they basically pulled the Sergeant Schultz, I know nothing, okay?
I have Belichick, no knowledge of anything.
No knowledge whatsoever of anything. Never mind deflating. Just anything. I don't know anything about anything.
I know none.
Do you believe Belichick? Do you believe Brady? Do you believe both? Do you believe neither one of them? And I don't, I think there's a growing shift as the week has gone on that is this really something the head coach is going to micromanage or is this something the quarterback is going to micromanage? And then you almost had Belichick saying, ask the QB. I mean, you did have him say, you know, the quarterbacks and the place kickers and the specialists care more about that kind of stuff as if to say, don't look at me, all right, move over here. Already, the first handful of responses we got are basically of the sentiment. We're over it. We don't care. I agree. We just don't care. Don't care one way or the other. Frankly, I'm over it. Just don't care. I mean, these are all different tweets I'm getting. It led the nightly news on every major broadcast, over-the-air broadcast network last night. I mean, somebody's caring about this story.
Well, somebody's caring about the story, and on top of that, look, when we came on the air yesterday was basically when Belichick was speaking, so I didn't get a chance to see it. I saw the quotes from it. I saw a reaction to it, but I didn't get to actually watch the press conference. And when you watch what happened with Belichick and Brady yesterday, look, you and I, we've been to a lot of press conferences. We've even been to them when, you know, these are bigger things at the Super Bowl, that kind of thing. Those were crazy.
They were packed.
Those were absolutely nuts. And that was a bunch of people who were interrupting people in the middle of their answers. I mean, Brady's trying to answer a question, and some other reporter's like, ah, yeah, whatever you got to say about that. I don't care. Let me ask you about your integrity now. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. It felt more like a movie than it did an actual real-life press conference. And throughout the whole thing, especially with Brady, I believe Belichick more. Brady, I simply don't believe. And there were questions that weren't asked that honestly I'm surprised they weren't asked. I, having worked doing this kind of thing as long as I have, you understand that certain people like things certain ways, right? I mean, I change seats based on whoever's coming in here to the studio.
Yes, you do. I know Jeff Loggeman's right. Not here today because you're in his seat.
Right. You do things certain ways for certain people. So the question Tom Brady needed to be asked maybe was, okay, when did you tell your equipment guys? How long ago did you tell your equipment guys, this is how I like a football? You know, not did you tell them Sunday night
right.
to deflate the balls. It's when's
have
the last
you ever,
time you had
have
right,
you ever
right. When's the last
them?
Time you had a conversation with your equipment guys about how you like the football? When did you tell them that piece of information? And have you talked to any of your team's equipment managers since Sunday? Have you talked to anybody about what happened? What happened to these footballs? Because I'm being personally and publicly embarrassed by whatever happened with those footballs on Sunday night. Has he had a conversation with anybody who may have been in charge of handling those things since that time, which would at least give you an idea about how interested he is in getting to the bottom of these answers, or if he already knows because he told those guys 10 years ago, deflate them. Look, but no one asked those questions because they were too busy asking them, how do you feel your personal integrity has been compromised by the things that have been going on? They asked a bunch of ridiculous things instead of asking, to me at least, the questions that matter that would at least maybe implicate him and what happened on Sunday night.
Look, this is not about deflated footballs. It is about a particular organization.
Yep.
Doing things the way they want to, no matter what the rules are or not, or the perception that they do things like that, more so than the norm, because you're hearing a lot of anonymous coaches being quoted as saying, not surprised it's them, that, you know, that people say, well, everyone does this. Well, these are not what the voices in the NFL, who, yes, you can talk about anonymous sources all you like. Guys won't put their name on it. Well, there's a reason for that.
Sure.
There are repercussions in the business. It's going to be tougher to get jobs. But guys want the message out there. Anonymous sources are used in every line of news gathering, period. And that's just the way it is. So if you choose not to believe a story that uses anonymous sources, you're not going to believe much of what you hear or read or see when it comes to the news in any facet.
Sure.
So it deflated footballs, Tony. It could have been were the chains shorter, so the Patriots only need to go 9 yards and 11
right.
inches. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter what the thing is. It's the fact that it's a thing where you're going above and outside the rules, or are you? The question is, are you going above and outside the rules? And it's the fact that it's the Patriots who've already done it. I mean, you can talk what you want about Spygate, how much did it help them? It's not the point, did it help them? Did they try to cheat? The NFL says yes, whether they put it in those words or not, because they docked them a first-round pick, and they find Belichick an unprecedented sum, and they find the Patriots a huge sum of money on it as well. So, and then they destroy the evidence after that,
right.
On top of it. This is Brady yesterday. This is a kind of a montage of his replies and comments when he stepped up to the podium yesterday. For the first time, for the most part, at least widespread, his squeaky clean image came under attack.
I have a process that I go through before every game where I go in and I pick the balls. When I pick those footballs out, at that point, you know, to me, they're perfect. I don't want anyone touching the balls after that. I don't want anyone rubbing them, you know, putting any air in them, taking any air out. To me, those balls are perfect, and that's what I expect when I show up on the field. You know, you go through that process of breaking the balls in and getting comfortable with them. Of course, you know, I choose the balls that I want to use for the game, and then, you know, that's what I expect to go out on the playing field with. I go in there and I choose, you know, however many balls are necessary for the game. Sometimes it's 12, 16, 18, 24. This last particular game was 24. And when I felt them, they were perfect. I mean, I wouldn't want anyone touching those. I would zip those things up and lock them away until I got out on the field and had the opportunity to play with them, and that's what I thought I was doing.
Told you there was obviously an issue with the balls.
I don't think anybody knew there was an issue with the balls. I think they said the balls are not ready for play, and then I turned around in the huddle, and the ball was ready for play. I'm not squeezing the balls. I'm not, you know, I don't, that's not part of my process. I certainly wouldn't want them to take away us breaking the balls in. You know, that would, I think that's a great thing for all the quarterbacks to have the balls in play that they want to use. You know, everybody has a preference. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like them tacky. Some guys like them brand new. Some guys like old balls. I mean, they're all different. You know, really, till Monday morning, I had no idea what happened with the balls. So the quarterbacks always, you know, will throw the balls, and, you know, if we like a ball, then we throw it aside. Our equipment guys do a great job of breaking the balls in. They also know that how I like the balls, and I tell them how great they are before the game, and how, you know, perfect job, great job. So they, you know, they know how I like it, and that's, you know, exactly the way they are.
These comments are going to come back to haunt him for the rest of his career in comedic fashion. Tell me Pete Schwede is not going to make an appearance on Saturday Night Live this week.
Oh, it's going to happen at some point in time. And it was actually funny. Like, Belichick would stop himself, and he'd start to say balls, and then he'd say footballs. Like, he would do it several times during it. And Brady yesterday, I was watching it at the beginning. I thought he was going to laugh at himself. Like, he said something, and you could see him start to smile. And then
he trolling America?
Yeah. I was
yesterday.
Like, I shouldn't be smiling at this. I get that it's kind of ridiculous. I would, you know, if you're getting ready for that game and you're setting aside the footballs that you want, right, Tom? And you said, I was warming up and these balls were perfect. They were exactly how I wanted them. Then when you took the first snap, you weren't like, wait a second, this isn't what I warmed up with. Like, if they were perfect, like you said they were, you didn't notice that they changed?
Tony, yeah, you've played, all you have to do is have played catch in the backyard a few times to know the difference in inflation in a football.
Oh,
I mean, you've thrown a football that's been over inflated. It's been rock hard, and you can't get a firm grip on it.
Yep.
It's difficult to throw. And the ones you can you're not sticking your fingers 3 inches in the football. It's just a little bit of compression.
Yeah,
makes it so much easier to control and throw
all
a football.
Cold weather air pressure idiots out there, look, the Colts balls passed inspection. They were both in the cold weather, so apparently weather affected them on one side of the ball and didn't on the other. Give me a break.
Look, the whole thing. Some equipment kid's going to get thrown under the bus on this or get
paid
off.
Surprised he didn't yesterday.
At some point. What equipment manager is going to doctor the footballs that Tom Brady wants to use if he works for the Patriots? Are you kidding me? And that's not the question. If you had turned him in at 10 pounds of pressure, and again, we know way too much about the specs of a football now. But if you had, and the referees signed off on them, that's on the refs.
Yeah.
They were checked, according to the story, and they were fine. And then at halftime, 11 out of 12 of them were no longer fine. And like you said, all the rest of them were okay. So something happened. The question is, right now, Tom Brady's reputation. Take a big hit. You got major guys coming out and swinging on this. I mean, Troy Aikman. Everyone is basically calling Tom Brady a liar.
Yep.
Okay, when you say, I do not believe Tom Brady, you're saying, I think he's lying, and you're just not using the word liar. Mark Burnell, we got a call out to him. He's working up in Bristol this morning. We'll see if he'll join us. He was one of the guys that was of that sentiment yesterday. So was Jerome Bettis and Brian Dawkins on that same panel with Burnell up in Bristol, Connecticut on ESPN. Jerry Rice coming out the day before saying, before these press conferences, saying, hey, if this in fact happened, this is cheating. And this is, you're talking about the integrity of the game. You're talking about huge names in the sport here. Former head of officiating Mike Pereira. Same thing from an official standpoint. Absolutely. This is cheating. This is an integrity of the game issue. It's not about whether they helped him win or not. It's, did you do anything against the rules to gain an unfair advantage? And I think, even though the scale of it so much less important, I think the great comparison people have been making the last 24 hours or so to Nixon and Watergate, He won the last election by a landslide. Did he need to spy on his Democratic rivals?
Right.
Probably not, but he couldn't help himself, and he did it anyway, and that's what brought him down. Whether it was necessary, whether he needed it to win, was beside the point. It was the fact that he was willing to do it and break the rules that was the point. I guarantee it's not going away next week, man. It's gonna dominate media day. I gotta believe, at least from the Patriots standpoint, next week. Brian Sexton gonna join us. We'll hear from some of the participants we talked about weighing in on the Deflategate situation. As crazy as it seems, I mean, 5 days later, who thought we'd be talking about this thing? But again, it's leading the nightly news on all the broadcast networks yesterday. That tells you that there's an incredible appetite out there for this story. We'll touch on it more as we go along. We'll talk about the week out in Mobile for the Senior Bowl. Brian Sexton, former voice of the Jaguars, is going to join us here next on 1010XL. We're brought to you every Friday by Claude Nolan Cadillac. If you want to get in today, 641-1010. That is the way to do it. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Oh, it's a bad YouTube clip. It's a little quiet, but he says, no one can resist my sweaty balls.
He shows up, what, once a month on that show anyway? Why not this week?
Odds that the opening, the cold open on Saturday Night Live is Ballgate, Deflategate,
I don't know how Ballgazi.
Got to at least be 1-1, right?
I mean, it's got
to
be State of the Union, money. Give me a break.
Even money.
Deflategate.
What the hell happened in the State of the Union? Obama cracked a wisecrack.
They do the State of the Union every year.
Brian Sexton's here, ladies and gentlemen. State of the Jaguars. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Just got back from Mobile.
Happy New Year. Radio speaking. Sure. I see you other times. The first time we've had you on in the new year. How big was this as a topic of conversation, the whole Deflategate during Senior Bowl week?
Everywhere. And the general consensus is that, and I talked to scouts and coaches from around the league, their ownership is watching this intently. There's a belief, right or wrong, that there's a different rule book when it comes to Belichick, that he gets away with things that no one else can. And that's either going to be proven or disproven this week, at least according to these coaches and scouts. They want to see how things are handled with Belichick.
I think the tough thing is, can you nail it to Belichick? You know, that's the question. And I agree with you. If this sticks to him in any way, I think the punishment will be significant. I don't think it will come down before the Super Bowl, however, because I don't think they will mess with that game. I mean, could you imagine if you took Belichick, we're just discussing this on the break, if you took Belichick out right now and said he's not coaching, he's suspended right now, rest of the week, won't be coaching Super Bowl week or in the game, line in Vegas is going to move 3 points easy, right? And then now you're bringing in a whole different set of parameters that you got to concern yourself
there
with.
There are so many considerations. You've got to get it right. You know, the thing I keep coming back to, okay, so Belichick denies it, and a lot of folks that you're talking to over there said, well, I mean, he has a lot on the line. This is not the week to, you know, to get squirrely and lie to the commissioner. This is the week to come out. So they believe him because there's so much on the line this week. But then Tom Brady comes out, and I was driving back, so I didn't hear his press conference. But he says he doesn't have anything to do with it. Okay, well, so what are you going to pin it on a ball boy?
Of course.
Where are you going to find this?
That's where it's going.
Ultimately, it comes back to who runs the show, who is in control. And when it comes to the football operation of the New England Patriots, it's Bill Belichick.
Well, look, my feeling is if you really can find a plausible, culprit here, and you point to it, because I think if the reports are correct, and let's state that, because we've heard the reporting of Chris Mortensen, who said that the league checked the balls before the game, they were fine. At halftime, they were not fine, and the Colts were within parameters. So it wasn't the weather, as Tony pointed out, or the air pressure that affected it. So we know something happened, and the balls were in the custody of the Patriots. So it falls on them to, keep them within specs. So unless you can find the culprit, I'm going to Belichick and saying, buddy, head of the corporation, buck stops here, all that stuff. And I think Troy Aikman's line is very accurate that it's going to continue to haunt Roger Goodell, what he said to Sean Payton, that ignorance is no excuse in this situation. You're responsible for knowing what's going on, particularly when you come in with at least one strike against you in the court of public opinion.
Well, there's so much at stake. The integrity of the game, protect the shield, which is the term that Roger used to use when he would come down here and was helping Wayne Weaver build this organization. Everything was about protecting the shield and making sure that the NFL brand was always maintained, that it was done the right way, okay? And so he's got to protect the shield. He's got to, with billions of dollars. Every franchise now is worth $1 billion.
And the worst PR year they've had in
forever. It's horrific. He's got to get it right. So that may mean waiting. And, of course, if they find out afterwards, then is there an asterisk next to the Super Bowl, right? I mean, the Colts right now, Colts players, for what it's worth, are saying, hey, do we get to replay the game? So if the Patriots win, do the Seahawks say, well, do we get to replay the game? I mean,
right.
You have that. So there's so much at stake, and none of us know all the facts yet. I would hate to be Roger Goodell this week.
And let's be clear. I think you and I would probably agree they won't replay any games. The Super Bowl outcome will stand in the record books for all time, but the perception of that, when you've got, before this ever came up, a Mount Rushmore type like Don Shula, just throwing off the Belichick line like a Yahoo, like I would, right? I mean, Don Shula is saying this. That tells you that perception has stuck with that organization.
Well, and Dan Shaughnessy, I saw a headline. I didn't get to read the column. But Dan Shaughnessy, Boston Globe writer, wrote that no matter how this comes out, the Patriots have tarnished their reputation. No matter how it comes out. That's one of their own writers saying that. So there's a lot at stake. And if you are Bob Kraft or Roger Goodell, you just have your head in your hands this week saying, how did it come to this?
Brian Sexton here with us on Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Let's talk Jaguars.
Okay.
What did you make personally of the hirings of Doug Marrone first to coach the offensive line, assistant head coach, and then Greg Olsen to run the show on offense?
Well, I love the Marrone hiring because he's a proven offensive line coach. You remember him from the Jets. Obviously, he did a heck of a job with the offensive line. Had great players, right, in New York and in New Orleans. So I love that because when you look at Luke Joeckel, you have so much invested in him, and he has not come close to actualizing his potential. And so I love that. Well, you've got Bowanko and you've got Brandon Linder, who I think Loggeman said over and over and over what a great player he's going to be. And you need to bring in a right tackle, and you need to get the most out of Beatles. You've got to have a strong presence there. You have to. And I think talking to people over there, Marrone is considered a very, very good offensive line coach. I really like Greg Olsen as a person. I mean, I remember when they brought him in and how they had to give him the assistant head coach title to get him away from Tampa. My philosophy is players, not plays.
Sure.
Right? Give anybody Tom Brady, and they'll win.
And you've seen a number of offense coordinators cycle through New England, and
who
they
is
continue
Adam
to
Gase?
Win.
Does anybody know Adam Gase if he doesn't have Peyton Manning, Julius Thomas, Demaryius Thomas? So just philosophically, I believe in players, not the plays. Now, that isn't to say that the coaching isn't important, because it is. You've got to have a guy that can get the most out of his players, who can develop Blake Bortles, who can work with an offensive line coach and get the scheme right. You've got to have a good coach. And I think Greg Olsen's a good coach. I've talked to a lot of people in the last few days, and all of them said unequivocally, good football coach, understands how to adapt to his personnel, high-energy guy, and is a good developmental coach. And I've heard all the arguments against that, too, by the way. I didn't ever care who the name was. I didn't care whether it was Adam Gase or Joe Smith. As long as you got the right guy. As long as you have that guy who knows how to develop a quarterback and understands the talent that he's got, great. But you got to get the right guy.
And look, that time will prove that out one way or the other.
We'll find out.
But what this hiring continues to prove, because I've never had any opinion otherwise, Gus Bradley doesn't wet his finger and stick it in the air, because clearly, I'm sure you're aware of what the Jaguar Twitter and just the general reaction is. When you go from the 31st ranked offense, you fire the coordinator and you hire the guy who ran the 32nd ranked offense, there's a built-in I told you so factor coming with this hiring if you get off to a slow start.
But just look at the players that Jed had to work with, right? And obviously their differences were philosophical. He didn't have a whole lot to work with here. What if he had a quarterback and a couple of receivers that were veteran guys, and a better running game? I mean, he wouldn't have been 30th either. I mean, it's players, not plays. Jed's creative enough to be able to do things. I'm sure Greg Olsen is also. It's about having the right fit, right? If you and I can't sit together in a room and work together, It's the wrong fit. I have to trust you if you're the coach, or you have to trust me if you're the player, that I know what I'm doing and that the scheme is set up for you to excel and that I'm asking everyone else to do the exact same thing. It's about relationships and the ability to work together. Now, fans don't take that into account because they don't have to. And Gus said that yesterday because I understand. No, I get it all. I understand they're looking for more. We are tasked with bringing more, and we can't just look and say, well, let's go get the number one offensive coordinator, right? Because everyone would look for that guy, or at least a guy who's 15 or better. You're looking for that guy whose personality fits yours, meaning you can work with him, your coaching staff, and your player. And let's be honest, it's all about Bortles. If he gets the most out of Bortles, he will get the most out of his career here.
You mentioned Gase. How serious was the Jags' interest in your opinion?
Very.
Was it a case then where they said, all right, we'd like to have him, but he's going to go, you know, check out other options? Maybe he's kind of holding us as the bird in hand option here, and we're not going to wait.
That's what I heard. What I heard talking to people in Mobile was that he was, and the Ravens did the same thing. They moved on. Just like the Jaguars did, they moved on because Gase was going to go, and there were a couple of job openings.
He's going to talk to Chicago, where he worked with John Fox, obviously.
And at some point, you have to look and see, does he fit? Do I want him bad enough that I'll wait for him to go and make the whole circuit and then have to decide? And in the meantime, the guy that I really like in terms of the fit, the personality, he's got other options too. So am I going to wait on the guy that had Peyton, or am I going to go for the guy that I think can develop Bortles? And Gus didn't come out and say this, but it was pretty clear that he spent enough time. He knew Greg, obviously, from their time in Tampa, had a lot of similar acquaintances. Dave Caldwell felt comfortable with him because he worked against him when he was in Tampa and Dave was in Atlanta. They liked what he brought to the table, and waiting on Gase meant waiting on getting going with your development. And you're still not sure if he's the right guy or not.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Can I ask you to stick around for a few minutes?
Sure.
All right, that was the spot I put you on. Cause I wanna,
what else can you ask me?
I want to get into what you saw in terms of the players and the coaching staffs working with those guys and the advantage they may get compared to, say, last year where they ended up drafting three guys off the South roster and, of course, Linder on the North as well. Brian Sexton here with us from Jaguars.com. We'll continue to take a look back at Senior Bowl week in Mobile, Alabama. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. More to come with Brian Sexton. Your call's welcome as well at 641-1010 here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday continues. Jaguars today, 1010XL 92.5 FM. Blake Bortles walking by a minute ago. Tony, you know what he's doing?
He's getting ready for his conversation with us on Radio Row.
That, all right, I was going to say he's just getting better.
I was going to say he's playing some ball.
He actually was carrying a football, Brian. I don't know if you saw that. Looked fully inflated to me.
Here's what I love about him. He walked by, nodded his head, just like he was one of the guys. Right?
Oh, yeah.
He has that it quality about a guy that everybody likes. And that's what you need from your quarterback, because everybody's got to like him. Everybody's got to want to play for him. And he's got that magnetism. Real subtle, just, hey, Mike, you know, kind of nodded at you. It was good. I like him.
We'll see what kind of pitch man he is next week, right?
Yeah.
What's his pitching?
I don't know. I forget. He's got.
I can't
something.
Remember what he was talking about last year on Radio Row 2.
My email's on the fritz. Was he pitching something last year?
Yeah, he talked about something at the very end. But I sat down with him and talked for like 7 or 8 minutes, and I can remember it was the first time I had met him, and so impressed.
Yeah.
You know, just having a couple minutes sitting there and talking to him, and I talked about it for the next month after that. I was like, look, I have no idea if the Jags are going to draft a quarterback in the top three, but this guy, I mean, he walks in the room like a quarterback should walk in a room. He talks to you like a quarterback should talk to you. I don't know anything about him as a player.
Right.
But this I like.
There's something special about those guys that the game is not too big and the position is not too big for him. It was too big for Blaine Gabbert, right?
Oh.
It's not too big for him.
No question. I mean, from that standpoint, nobody has any qualms or concerns, right? It's the, you know, you got to play. You got the mechanics, and this, you got to fulfill your on-field potential. Nobody's worried about all that other stuff. But it's funny. I don't know if you saw.
He's here in January.
No, that's what I'm saying. He's getting better. He's working. And I know. I'm not doubting it. I'm hoping for the best outcome. But they had that path to the draft thing that they did when something. I forget what. Maybe it was an ESPN thing, but it was like an hour thing where they showed him and maybe one other or two other guys. Marquise Lee, I think, was one of them, right, on this? And they had tracked them, like, the whole process, and they showed him on Radio Row, mm-hmm. and going to Radio Row that week, and you know how it is, man. I mean, these guys, they go to the same, they go to the, you know, every 10 minutes they go to another table, get asked the same questions over and over and over and over again. And they've got to, but it's the only time they're talking to that person.
Yep.
So their job in part on that day is to sell themselves equally to each person that they're talking to in each market that they're talking to. And to see behind the scenes, he's kind of like, are we done? and that's just normal.
Yeah.
When you see, it's kind of a meat grinder situation that you get thrown into sometimes for 8 hours without a break. You're just going bam, 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 bam to every different market in America. And, you know, he's still put on the kind of display you'd want him to put on if you're his agent in that circumstance.
Well, I like it. Is it more of a meat grinder for a 21-year-old kid than you going out and selling your spots and coming and doing your show, right? Do you know what I mean? I look at those guys and I want to see how do they handle the situation. It's supposed to be fun. I mean, you're getting asked about yourself.
Sure.
When you were 21 years old, how many people were interested in you?
Me.
Right.
I was. Yeah, exactly. Still am.
Exactly. Exactly. How do they handle that? How do they handle all the interest? Do they rise above it and, you know, become the kind of people that you want them to be, or do they fall into it? And it's about me. It's
right.
About me. You're asking about me. I'm special. It's about me. And he's the kind of guy, and there are other guys like that too, where you see they rise above it, and you see they appreciate it and understand what it is. Because as I told a player years ago, he was balking about signing an autograph at an off-season thing. I said, well, in a couple of years, no one's going to want it. So you might as well sign it now.
Right.
That's the way it goes.
All right.
Enjoy it.
Let's get down to some future Jaguars, perhaps.
Yeah.
You, the scout. What'd you see? Who'd you like?
The guy that stood out the most to me was Darrell Williams, the big right tackle from Oklahoma. 6'5", 335, big guy, right? I think he's a right tackle only. I don't think I saw him at left tackle the whole time we were there. I thought he had a good kick. You know, you're looking for a guy who can get back there. I watched, and they don't blitz in this game, but Gus and those guys put them through some blitz situations. Because the great thing about this game is that Gus and Dave put a practice together that all the scouts want to see. They're working for these kids' best interest. They're putting them in situations so scouts can make good evaluations. And I watched him at the line of scrimmage when they would double up and bring a couple guys to the line of scrimmage and watch him, you know, figure out what do I have to do and then make the right call. I didn't see him make many mistakes the whole time we were there. Big, big broad shoulders, big wide hips. You're not going to bowl over this guy. Looks like a right tackle, and I was really impressed with him.
Miami guys got a lot of good pub this week, I thought, too.
Dorsett and Walford,
the
tight end. Walford caught almost everything in sight. And he's a guy that looks the part. You know, I mean, he's 6'4", 6'5", 250. I mean, he's kind of got that. I think he was a former basketball player, too. Athletic, and a lot of the times, the tight ends, Ron had the tight ends over where we were, and so I could listen to him. And there were only three. So you could hear the individual coaching. And, boy, it sure seemed like he liked what he saw from that kid. Dorsett scored in the two-minute drill yesterday on one of those little jet screen pitches. He's got great hands, and, boy, can he accelerate. I mean, really, really get going up the field. I like Sammy Coates, the kid from Auburn. I know a lot of people do. He's a big, broad guy. I mean, really, go back. Because you can say 6'3", 220 all day long, and different guys carry it differently. And he's got those broad shoulders and really long arms, and that's important. And he went up and I thought he was going to make the play. He went up over two defensive backs on a go route and just couldn't bring the ball in. But elevated, got his hands on the ball, and as he came down, he lost control of it. On the defensive side, a couple guys stood out. One is a guy named Geno Grissom. Again, another Oklahoma kid, 6'3", 262. They put him at auto sum, and they had him over at the Leo spot. And again, 6'3", 262, built the way you want in a Leo. Showed great quickness, really long arms, you know, and that's what they liked about Chris Smith. Explosive, understood angles, thought he was a guy that, again, I liked, and I'm not a scout, but I looked at him and thought, this is a guy who can fit into a specific role and play. Now, is he smart enough? Is he that high-character guy? Is he everything they're looking for? I don't know. You'd have to ask them. But he really stood out. The kid from UCLA, whose name is, you know, a foot long, I can't pronounce it. I thought he looked good. The guy that I was most impressed with on the defensive side, though, was Kevin White, the corner from TCU. I watched him stand up, jam Sammy Coates at the line of scrimmage, and then redirect him back to the inside. And Coates is, I think White's 5'9", Coates is 6'2", and from a physical stature perspective, you wouldn't think that White would be able to do that. But he showed a toughness. He elevated in the end zone and broke up a couple plays in the two-minute drill that they ran at Ladd People Stadium yesterday. So, I mean, you could see guys stand out. Now, I didn't see that one guy stand out above all others at the North practice, Danny Shelton, the defensive tackle from Washington, and Amir Abdullah, the running back from Nebraska. They were thought to be the best players, and they showed it. The guy that was thought to be the best player on the South club is the Collins kid, the offensive tackle from LSU. I didn't look at a guy and see him and go, wow, he's as good as advertised. And I watched Tony Boselli working him hard, but he didn't look like a prototypical left tackle to me. I mean, I think he's got the size, but he stood up straight as he was kicking back, and I know Tony was working with him on that. I thought he gave up a lot of ground and didn't redirect guys way to the outside, and I thought that was what he was supposed to do well. Now, maybe he had a bad week. I don't know. I didn't really spend a lot of time talking to him. But I thought the Williams kid from Oklahoma was the better tackle.
You did spend a good bit of time talking with Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell. Those interviews certainly available at Jaguars.com if people haven't checked them out already. And I thought some interesting stuff, but just your sense of what did they learn from last year's experience that they were able to apply this year to even get more out of it this time?
They took their very specific criteria, guys that fit. And last year, I don't know this to be certain, but in talking to them, last year they let guys come to them and find them, right? This year they went in even more prepared for the guys that fit their criteria, whether it's height and weight, whether it's character, off the field, whatever it may be. And I know there was a meeting last night where they all got together, the coaches and scouts, and they were going through the list of their kind of guys because they wanted to maximize. Today, they get the North team for interviews. And they wanted to maximize their time with the guys that fit their criteria and not waste the time with the guys that don't. So my sense is that they were even more dialed in this year on the information from their scouts about the guys that fit what they want.
You hope it's the last time they're coaching this for a long, long time.
You hope so, although I'll say this, and people forget that Tampa should have been coaching this. So it's kind of a blessing in that they got the chance.
Why would they turn it down?
I don't know.
They said they were searching for an offensive coordinator and kind of wanted to focus on that.
So were the Jags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but see, the Jaguars got so much out of it. Remember, Brandon Linder, and I'm using Lagerman's evaluation here, probably a perennial Pro Bowl player when this team becomes good. Telvin Smith showed us nothing to think that he isn't going to be a very good player. Aaron Colvin showed us the exact same thing. You got three guys out of this that could be long-term starters, even Pro Bowl kind of guys, a year ago, because you were there and got to know them on a different level. Gus told me yesterday, 2 days ago, when we sat down for our one-on-one, he said, I get these guys off to the side, and I get 35, 45 minutes with them in a setting where they're comfortable one-on-one, where they're not going into another interview right after this, right, on Radio Row kind of thing. And I get to know them and figure out their hot buttons. And if you haven't figured out with Gus, he's trying to figure you out right away. He's listening to every word you say. So they weren't going to miss on the opportunity to go and do this. No, you don't want them to be back because it means that they haven't had a good season. You can't have three in a row. Phil Savage said on Monday, he goes, we'd love to have these guys every year because they run a high-intensity practice. The kids love to play for them, and the scouts love to watch it. I tell you, Gus and Dave, if they're 10-6, would love to have the chance to come back and do it.
Sure. Under those circumstances, I will give it my blessing. Yes. All right. Brian, before we wrap up with you here, just a general thought about the philosophy of how this offseason will play out. I think the consensus is you don't want to get much younger on offense,
no,
right?
You can't.
So
you can't be. Any
so younger. So when you talk about a guy like Darrell Williams, right, who stands out as a potential right tackle, how much draft capital? And that's where you're going to get the youth base part. How much are they going to even spend on the offensive side of the football, in your opinion? Because I think the consensus is they'll go free agency on offense, they'll go draft on defense. Clearly, that's not going to be a completely exclusive, but.
No.
For the most part.
Well, you know, everything has to go through the filter of what they do in free agency. And, of course, we don't even know who's going to get to free agency.
Right. That's a big part of it.
It won't be until we come back from the combine that you start to see the franchise tags go down and teams are looking at where they can get players in the draft. And I like Darrell Williams, right? That doesn't mean that they do or that he's even a third-round pick. But I look at the body and the movement and I think that's probably a second-round pick. So I don't know. My philosophy or my belief on their philosophy is the checkbook is coming open. Because they need to start spending some money. Not all of it in 1 year, but they need to start working their way towards that 90% threshold. And there are some guys that they can attack. But I don't know that it's going to be offense in the in free agency and defense in the draft, although it looks that way. Because, what if the two defensive tackles, defensive ends, Leonard Williams and
Randy Gregory.
Randy Gregory, what if they go 1-2?
Right.
What if the quarterbacks, and this happens, what if people don't fall in love with the quarterbacks and they sit there at three and there's two quarterbacks. Well, you're going to lure the Jets or somebody to come up.
You would think.
You're right. Then you're going to back up. Okay, well, maybe your philosophy's changed. So my sense is they're going to write some checks in free agency and they're going to spend
some
money and see where they stand. If you're sitting there at three and you have shored up your offensive line in free agency, give me Leonard Williams all day long.
I think most people would agree with that.
He's terrific, and the people in Mobile just couldn't say enough about
how
good he
is. I'll be honestly shocked if he's there at three.
I would think so, too, because yeah. I think someone sees J.J. Watt in him, that guy that's too big and too quick for guards and centers and too strong and too fast for defensive or for offensive tackles, and think and by the way, he's a really good player. Whether he plays at that level or not, who knows?
And unfortunately, that team is likely the Tennessee Titans, because based on the way it's going to play out, everybody expects the Bucs to go.
But they play a 3-4.
True.
Right? And Gregory would fit one of those outside pass rushers. Remember, Ken Wisenhunt came from Pittsburgh, where he was used to having that Greg Lloyd, Kevin, Green, explosive pass rusher who's coming off of the edge and creating mismatches. So they could easily go Gregory. Here's the consensus from, Rob Rang and Matt Miller and all the draft guys I talked to yesterday, Daniel Jeremiah. The Jaguars sitting at three are in an excellent position no matter what happens.
Let's hope that's the case. There he goes, Brian Sexton. We appreciate it. Check out all his fantastic work at Jaguars.com. Thank you, buddy.
I appreciate you having me in.
All right, man. There he goes. Brian Sexton here with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony coming back. We've got this date in football history coming your way. We've got the Honda drive around the NFL. John Osher going to stop by in about 25 minutes or so as well to recap some of his thoughts from the week out in Mobile, Alabama. It's Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
Oh, yes. This date in football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry here on Gate Parkway in Jacksonville. Call 620-9225 if you have need of a family dentist, you need cosmetic work done, maybe the SomnaMed SnoreGuard, custom fit to you, 620-9225, or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services on this date, January 23rd. Some birthdays of note, including 1936. We see him every year, Tony, still not in the Hall of Fame, and at this rate, I'm guessing never will be. Jerry Kramer played for the Packer dynasty
yep.
in the 1960s, and it's just the, kind of the epitome of what we see every year in terms of being the grizzled, old, this is how football used to be kind of guy. And, is by many you talk to, it's a mystery as why he's not in the Hall of Fame. Packer offensive lineman, and glad to say he is still going. Pat Hayden, NFL quarterback with the L.A. Rams, born on this date in 1953. Eric Metcalf, born on this date in 1968, a longtime NFL receiver slash running back slash return man extraordinaire. Also, a painful one for me, the Mud Bowl, 1983, Miami linebacker A.J. Duay has three interceptions, including one that he ran back for a 35-yard touchdown. The Dolphins beat the Jets in the AFC Championship game as the teams combined for 12 turnovers on a muddy field. And speaking of the muddy field, Don Shula, who called Belichick Belichick, for years there's been some question as to how far the Dolphins went in slopping that field up prior to the game. It was bad conditions to play in anyway, but regardless, just a painful one for me. The shutout loss at the hands of the Dolphins back in 83. Remember it well as a youth. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Indianapolis Colts linebacker DeQuell Jackson is out at the Pro Bowl this week and spoke to the media for the first time yesterday since Deflategate began. Jackson says that he did not notice whether or not the ball he intercepted on Sunday night, the AFC Championship game, was deflated or not, that he's just a defensive player, and that when he came to the sideline, he simply gave the ball to a Colts equipment guy so that the equipment guy could set it aside for Jackson somewhere as a souvenir. It was his first interception on the season, and it's not every day you pick up.
That's a playoff interception, right? I don't remember what the score was at that point in the game.
Might have been 17-7. It might have been 10-7.
So still, the game was still in the balance as far as that goes. And I think that's, you know how these stories go. It's like a game of telephone, Tony, right? I mean, DeQuell Jackson brought the ball to the ball boy. There was some initial confusion early in the week. Did DeQuell notice that the ball was not inflated enough? Did the ball boy do it? Well, according to DeQuell Jackson, he's saying, it wasn't me. I don't know who did it, but it wasn't me. I just think most of these players, it's like the old snitches get stitches kind of mentality. Nobody wants to be ratting anybody out. The retired players are a lot more likely to come out and say, yeah, that's cheating if you did it.
Yep.
The current players don't want to be seen as whiny, finger-pointing babies, you know, like, oh, I'm not going to go down that road. I'm not going to call a guy out. At least it seems that way to me.
No, it certainly does. Potentially lost in Deflategate is the fact that, you know, they are going to play a Super Bowl in 9 days in Arizona.
No.
Seattle Seahawks nickelback Jeremy Lain was asked about what makes Rob Gronkowski so good. Lain's response, quote, I actually don't think he's that good. He's okay. He does have a big body, but from what I've seen on tape, he doesn't like you putting your hands on him. So if we put our hands on him and shake him up a little bit, he won't catch that many balls. Boy, those Seahawks, they are not afraid to talk.
I don't care. Let's just poke the bear. What bear? He's just a little tiny cub, Tony. Right. He's not that good.
Once you put your hands on him, he's
Rob Gronkowski,
not that
you kidding
big.
Me?
Yeah. The Baltimore Ravens have announced that they will be parting ways with defensive tackle Terrence Cody, a second-round pick in 2010. The odd part of this story is the team has announced that they will terminate Cody's contract following the Super Bowl. Why is that weird? Cody's scheduled to become a free agent in March anyway. So the timeline here doesn't make any sense.
That is kind of weird.
But there are reports coming out of Baltimore that they plan on terminating the contract for Cody next.
Why don't they
10
do it
days
today?
From now? I don't know.
I mean,
don't know.
If you're gonna do it then, if you're gonna do it early, why not do it now? It's very strange.
It's a weird story.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right, Terrence Cody. He wasn't. It was Andre Smith who was really bad at the combine in terms of lack of.
Yeah, Andre Smith is the one they still show memes of.
Right, with the chest knocking him out, practically flapping around.
Yeah.
Terrence Cody wasn't exactly.
No, he's a mountain of a man.
Yes. I'm trying to remember if there were some equally unflattering pictures. I don't know if anything would equal the unflattering pictures that Andre Smith produced with his physique or lack thereof. 641-1010 if you want to get in today. Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida. When it comes to the Deflategate situation, and I get it. I can see the responses of a lot of you. We're sick of it. We're over it. As you heard Brian Sexton say, it dominated the conversation all Senior Bowl week. And that this is a behind the scenes, the NFL personnel, coaches, what have you, are on the edge of their seat to see what happens and how the Patriots are disciplined, if at all, in this circumstance. But we ask you today, based on basically their flat out denials of any knowledge of any of this. I didn't even realize that we got to go to the Super Bowl by winning that game. I was so focused on the Indianapolis Colts. You expect Belichick to say something absurd like that, at least. But do you believe Belichick? Do you believe Brady? Do you believe both of them? Do you believe neither of them? Brady comes into it, Tony, with a lot more goodwill than Bill Belichick does, right? He, for the most part, he's been pretty Teflon in his NFL career. As you heard Richard Sherman say yesterday, the whole "you mad bro" thing, right? Brady said after that game, where this is one where Sherman came up to him after the game and he did the whole "you mad bro," you know, what's wrong? And Brady claimed after the game he didn't even know what he was saying. It was so loud he thought he was coming up to say "good game." Well, Sherman's like, oh, he apparently doesn't remember what he was saying during the game. He's got amnesia or something. I guess he was yelling to the refs, hey, good call. And that he said Brady basically, and look, this doesn't make him a cheater, but Brady basically was saying to the Seahawks in that game a few years back, who the hell are you guys? Why don't you come up and see me after the game, as if to say, come get my autograph when we're done thrashing you. And that's why Richard Sherman took such glee. You know, that's the thing about Richard Sherman. He seems to have an agenda when he goes after somebody that he feels like he's had provocation, whether it's with Michael Crabtree, in this case, Tom Brady,
Don't ever open your mouth about me.
I mean, Tony, I've heard, there have been stories written over the years that Tom Brady could run for governor of Massachusetts one day, that he's the perfect politician. He's squeaky clean with the beautiful wife and the heroic on-field hero and all this stuff. And, you know, so he does, it's easier for him to get the benefit of the doubt, which is, I think, why it's so eye-opening, at least to me, to see so many of his peers and former players around the National Football League basically call him a liar and not believe what he's saying yesterday. Is he that cold and calculating and that much of a sociopath? I think a lot of people think Bill Belichick will look right at you and lie right to your face. Do you get the sense that Brady, I mean, boy, he put it this way, he's a pretty cool customer if he in fact is giving you a line of BS, or is he playing a semantic game saying, well, I never told him about this for this game because this has been an ongoing practice for however many years.
And again, that's why one of my questions would have been, okay, when, if you have had a discussion with your equipment managers about how you like the footballs to be inflated, when did you have that conversation? I don't know that you had that conversation on Sunday night, but at some point you've told somebody how you prefer those footballs to be inflated or deflated or whatever during a game. And again, the whole thing is a little ridiculous. I know everyone keeps pointing out it was 45-7 in the AFC Championship game. It didn't make a difference in that game. You're right. It didn't make a difference in that game. Did it make a difference the week before potentially when it was 35-31? I don't know. Has it made a difference at some point in time over the last 10 years? How many times did they beat the brains out of the Indianapolis Colts and Peyton Manning up there in that building when Peyton's throwing 3-4 picks in a game and Tom Brady was once again 2 touchdowns, no interceptions in an AFC Championship game? Was he doing it then where it might have had an impact in the outcome of a game when we're talking about the best run in the National Football League in the last 15 years? How long have they been trying to get these types of advantages where they can? That's the bigger issue here. That's the bigger question with a team like the New England Patriots, because they've shown a willingness to skirt the rules if it benefits them on the field. I'm not saying that Tom Brady watched the tape of the walkthrough of the St. Louis Rams. I don't think he did, but I think that coaching staff did, and that had them better prepared for that Super Bowl against St. Louis. I believe that. And that's flat out cheating. That helped them win their first championship. That's flat out cheating. I believe that happened. So what else are the New England Patriots willing to do to skirt and bend the rules to stay on top? That's the bigger issue here, not deflated footballs. That's just the catalyst for this conversation to come up again.
All right, 641-1010. Let's get Mike up. He's been hanging on for a while. Mike, we appreciate your patience. What can we do for you this morning?
Hey, Mike, just to be fair, let me tell you, I am a Patriots fan.
Okay.
All right, but I have a little different take on this, and I think Bill Belichick could have handled it differently and would have diffused this thing from the beginning. Nobody seemed to be paying attention to the actual game statistics and how the game played out. So if I'm Bill Belichick, I'm inviting the NFL to look into who manipulated those footballs in the first half. Because when you look at the first half, Tom Brady didn't have his best half. He threw the interception that got the whole thing started. They only scored 17 points. They had several drop passes. Except when the balls were swapped out at halftime, in the second half, Tom comes out in the third quarter alone. He goes 9-for-9, and we score 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, Mike, first of all, thank you, and I appreciate that. And I've heard every Patriot fan in America use this rationale. And again, to me, it's moot point, does not matter one iota. What the stats were with the balls, if the balls were manipulated with the intent to give an advantage, whether it gave an advantage or not, doesn't matter to me. I don't care. If my kid looks at his neighbor's paper and copies their answer on a test, maybe he copied the wrong answer, right? It didn't help him at all. He still cheated on the test, okay? And he should be punished for cheating if his teacher catches him doing it, okay? So to me, I don't care. And if you're trying to insinuate because the stats were worse with the deflated ball that maybe it was done to the Patriots, well, they were in possession of the footballs from the time the referee handed them over to the ball boy. So nobody on the Colts had access to the Patriots' batch of footballs. I don't know if that was the insinuation there. But I keep hearing this argument. Look at the stats. No one's saying they would have... The whole point is, doesn't matter. They would have won the game without it.
Right.
Belichick or the Patriots, the perception is they can't help themselves. They're going to cheat anyway. That's why the Nixon Watergate thing is being brought up. He wins his previous election in a landslide, and it doesn't matter. He has to cheat anyway to try to win the next one because it's not good enough because he's paranoid and he just can't let it go. And that's the perception. Again, true or not, I don't know, but it comes out of what you talked about, Tony. It comes out of Spygate, and Spygate, the NFL hammered them over Spygate. So the only conclusion you could draw is the NFL said they cheated during Spygate. That's the only logical conclusion you can draw.
And what was that, the graph you were talking about earlier today?
Oh, yeah. Somebody sent me a graph of all every team in the NFL, okay, most, least to most fumbles over the last 5 years, from 2010 to 2014.
Okay.
And how many plays per fumble? You know, because if a team runs a lot more plays, they might have more fumbles, but on a percentage basis, sure, it wouldn't be any different. Okay. Now, how does this factor in? Well, let's, for instance, if the ball's a little softer, I would think not only is it easier to grip for the quarterback, it's potentially easier for the running back to
Jerome
hang
Bettis
on to
has
it.
Talked about that.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So, there's a range that goes from about 75 to about 140. Okay, where every team falls in, and it's a pretty consistent graph line of about 40-degree line going up, and it's pretty, you know, pretty level as far as that goes, pretty steady progression.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to that the team has about 140s in second place, then it goes up to the Patriots with 187 touches per fumble. I mean, it jumps off, it's like somebody spiked on the lie detector test, and you see,
and that's with Ridley.
And that's right, exactly. That's with Stephen Ridley, who's a fumbling creature. Look, I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But that, again, this is more about where they put themselves in the public perception. I'm not saying that they won all these games because they had a slightly deflated football.
Right.
Barry Bonds, everyone says, well, he's a Hall of Famer without the steroids. Yeah, but he did it for what? To be even better,
right?
To cut down any margin for question.
And as you've said, if it was San Diego, we'd all go, all right, find them and let's move on with this.
Right. It's the fact they never win anything anyway.
Right. It's the fact that it's New England.
Who's already been caught
right. Cheating.
So there you have it. All right. You can weigh in on that. You believe Belichick, Brady, both or neither when it comes to that. We'll come back. Johnny O, Jaguars.com, senior writer, is back in the house. He'll join us next on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Very appropriate. Very appropriate. Nicely played, Tyler Devin. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Calling on Cadillac Friday. Glad it's Friday. I mean, Sunday's almost here. Got to get up early, Tony. It'll be good once we get out to the desert. Johnny O is back, traveling from
heading out tomorrow.
Metropolis. Yeah, we're heading out Sunday morning, the wee hours on Sunday morning. Yep, and we'll be back. Actually, coming back next
Saturday.
You're
in your element at the Super Bowl, aren't
you? I love the Super Bowl.
That's kind of your world.
I like it.
Radio Row.
Radio Row's fun.
Chaos.
Chaos is
grabbing
good.
Guys.
Well, now careful now.
Okay. All this.
Are we talking to Plate Gate?
Yeah.
What are we talking here?
Settle down there, OG.
Like I'm soft and round and thin and otherwise, don't know what to do as far as that goes. How's Mobile for you?
How's Mobile? I mean, yeah. It's always a more interesting week. It turns chaotic when you've got something going on like a coordinator search, but it's always a more interesting week for the coverage. I mean, it's a tough event to cover. If there's not anything going on, because you're sort of, you're just throwing darts on who you want to talk about if you're talking about the college players, because you've got 100 guys, nobody knows who your team's going to draft. It's sort of all speculation and you're throwing out names. So this week, having the coordinator, being able to talk to some coaches who were over there and some people about the, you know, the people they hired, It made it an interesting week, and certainly the reaction and the conversation around the hires made it a very interesting week.
Well, the reaction has been the best reaction has been, we'll hope for the best. That's been the high end of it. And
but let me ask you this: isn't that always what you're doing when you hire a coordinator?
Maybe, but
definitely, because you never know.
Well, you never know, but I don't think it would have been like, I think more people would have said, oh, Trestman, despite the bad year in Chicago, has a reputation of being more of a, you know, passing game genius. Fair or not, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think initially Trestman was the name that everyone said, oh, that would be
sure,
a home run hire. And I think Gase, to some degree, somewhat, more the element of the unknown, as Tony pointed out yesterday, what more can you do? With the weapons he had, you can have good ingredients and still make a bad meal. Okay,
true.
It's hard to screw up Peyton Manning. I get that, but Peyton doesn't have the best offense in league history every year. You know, he had it probably when he threw the 49 touchdowns
right,
in Indy back in 2005, I think it was.
Four, yeah.
2004. Mm-hmm. It was probably the best we ever saw. And then Brady in 2007 topped it with the 50 with Randy Moss and Welker coming on board. And then they blew it out of the water last year.
Right.
It doesn't happen every year, so. He certainly was not an impediment
no. To
everything running, you know, fantastically. And you give him some credit, at least I do, for being able to change things up as the year went along, whether it's to mask some of the deficiencies related to physical ailments mm-hmm. that Peyton Manning was suffering, and they become more ground-oriented. They lost Julius Thomas for a good stretch of time. Welker was basically a complete nothing, and they found ways to continue to
a
put points
nothing.
On the board.
Wow.
He was this year.
All right.
Welker?
No, I know.
A terrible year.
Complete nothing.
I mean, he's a complete nothing by NFL. Look, gotcha. Compared to me, he's a great player.
Okay.
Compared to typical NFL slot receiver this year, he's fallen off dramatically.
Yeah, you know, again, I guess I just have gotten to the point where I don't want to say that the coordinators don't matter, because they do. But I think we overplay it and overblow it this time of year.
Sure we do.
It's our job. I get it. But what they need from a coordinator is they need Greg to come in, settle things down, have these players believing in what he's doing, and then these guys have to get better around it. It's so much more about the players and their development than it is the precise play calling, the scheme, the history, the whole thing. A really, really bad coordinator can hurt you a lot more than a really, really quote unquote good coordinator can help you.
I would agree with that. I just think Jag fans are wondering,
I understand there's no excitement about it.
In what column does Greg Olsen fit when you just look at the stats? I get Brian Sexton made a pretty good case for not looking at the stats. You know, and I don't think Brian's trying to be a company man. This is, I think that was Brian's opinion. Like, how does this guy mesh with you philosophically?
Right.
Personality-wise, how is he at developing young quarterbacks? Because most people feel that they got a surprisingly good performance out of Derek Carr last year. Now, my question would be, do you give more credit to Olsen? Do you give it to John DeFilippo, who got the Cleveland Browns offensive coordinator gig? He was a QB coach. So what do you think? I mean, is Selfo going to be the guy? Do you expect any changes at this point in time?
I don't know. I have to say, it wouldn't surprise me either way. My guess is, I would think that Greg probably has a guy, but I don't know that. I mean, that's
it's
a
not
gut
gonna
feeling.
Be DeFilippo, we know.
Right.
At least
but
we know that much.
I think those conversations will take place early next week. It wouldn't surprise me either way. And I honestly just don't know, because I'm not sure that they've had that conversation to take it to its final conclusion yet. So I don't know.
All right, whether it is Frank Selfo or not, the hands-on guy, the day in, day out, the quarterback's mm-hmm. coach, or the overall guy, both important. And
yeah.
You're going to have them both, but
they're important for different reasons.
Do we overlook the...
What you really want out of the quarterback's coach, in my opinion, 20 years ago when I started covering the league, the quarterback's coach was... Some teams had him, some teams didn't. And they came around because... Teams started figuring out that it wasn't enough just to have the offensive coordinator. The theory before that was, well, the quarterback's in the room with the offensive coordinator all the time. If something's going wrong, the coordinator can look at it and figure it out. Well, a lot of quarterbacks were, you know, slipping and erratic in fundamentals. So a couple teams had a quarterback's coach. It works. Then every team had a quarterback's coach. Monkey see, monkey do in the league. So the quarterback's coach is really about making sure that guy's fundamentals stay as strong as possible throughout the course of the season. And that is the job there, and that's an important job for Blake next year. He wasn't able – during the season, it's very, very hard to know who the quarterback is and the quarterback's coach to have that happen, because you're dealing with so much other game planning. The coordinator is much more about establishing the offense – establishing the philosophy, calling plays, game planning, not as much time to deal with the footwork and the arm placement and all of the detail stuff that a quarterback's coach is supposed to do.
We had Tom McManison last week, and he didn't necessarily agree with the idea that you couldn't work on some of the mechanical stuff. That he's like, look, obviously I'm not a quarterback, haven't been a quarterback, but he's been around enough practices to say, you know, there's plenty of time if you want to get that done. He compared it to Cam Newton, who in the game against Arizona, he didn't throw it very well. He said, oh, you know what, some of this stuff was mechanical. One good week of focusing on this, I'm going to get this straightened out. So he was saying, look, here's a guy who thinks you can do this as it's going on. And maybe it's a case, Blake everything's new for the first time. He's got so many things that to, you know, it was just so much to grasp an NFL game plan. I'm not saying too much for him, but you know what I'm saying. There's a lot that goes into it.
And I think Blake would tell you, from listening to him talk about this, he knows he still has a long way to go. And he feels like he came a very long way from where he was coming out of his senior season, or his final season at Central Florida. He felt like he came a long way from there, even toward the end of this season. And he feels like he still has a long way to go. But if he can continue the improvement that he made, then he feels like he can get to the place where he needs to be. So considering that he still has a long way to go, and considering this is still a progression for him, may have been tougher to get it right when the bullets were flying during the season than when he is more developed, and or than when it is more muscle memory what he needs to be doing. Maybe harder when you're 90%, you can tweak a couple things and get it right. When you really have a long way to go, maybe harder to do it during the regular season. That's just a theory.
John Osier here with us, senior writer for Jaguars.com. John, I'll ask you what I asked Brian Sexton in regards to the Jaguar coaching staff. Did you see anything noticeable in your conversations with Gus and Dave this week that they said, wow, we really learned from our experience last year, and we're going to be even better taking advantage of the Senior Bowl coaching week than we were last time around?
Yeah, I got the idea talking to Caldwell after yesterday's practice that they felt like they got the system right in terms of how to evaluate last year. Didn't change very much in terms of what they were doing, and really feel like they got about as much benefit as you could possibly get out of it last year. I'm not sure it's realistic to think that they're going to get four guys, with three of them being your best rookies and three of them being guys that you look at and go, hey, these guys might be core play. You know, you look at Linder, Colvin, and Telvin Smith. I would make the argument they're probably the three best rookies and the guys they're most excited about in terms of, we know what's going to happen with these guys. We can see the projection already. I don't know that it's realistic to think you're going to get that kind of benefit, but I think they're certainly going to feel better on draft day. It's interesting. I asked Dave right before we left yesterday, how much does this help? What does the Senior Bowl really give you? And the impression was, when he's pulling the trigger on a guy on draft day that they've had in the Senior Bowl, or when he's bypassing a guy on draft day, there's much less second guessing and wondering about what kind of guy he is, what kind of guy is going to be in your building. He said it's easy to fake in a 15-minute combine interview when you're behind closed doors with one guy and this guy has said the same thing in 17 straight interviews.
And he's been prepped for
that. He said it's pretty easy to fake it. He said it's much harder to fake an entire week of being around a kid, seeing what he's like, just kind of watching him when he's eating with his buddies. You know, all that stuff that you get a vibe for a guy. When they're picking a guy they've had in the Senior Bowl, I get the impression when they pick Telvin Smith, Aaron Colvin, who had a lot of question marks last year, obviously had an ACL coming in, they didn't have any doubt what kind of work ethic, what kind of attitude this guy was going to have toward it. It gave him confidence to pick him. So if you can have a little bit of an advantage on draft day and turn, you know, usually get three or four guys out of a draft that are guys you can depend on. If you up that by one by being at the Senior Bowl, huge success. If you get one Aaron Colvin out of it, unbelievable week, right?
If you get one Aaron Colvin or Brandon Linder or any of those guys, you take that in a heartbeat.
You know, and Linder, remember, was not a guy that when he was drafted, it wasn't like every draft analyst went, hey, great pick.
No, but they clearly knew what they thought they saw in him, because they wouldn't have made the move up to go get him, because they wouldn't have taken the, you know, a risk.
That was not, you know, again, in looking at the draft stuff afterward, that was not one that everybody went, hey, great steal. It was, granted, you know. And
after the season, they're saying that.
Right, after the season, I'm saying at that moment,
I hear you.
They saw something. And Dave even said this week, it was interesting about Linder, he said, he didn't have a great Senior Bowl, and he even made it sound like he had not a very good Senior Bowl at all, but they were around it enough. They knew some of the reasons. And I think anytime you're around a situation, if you're paying attention, you pick up stuff that you wouldn't pick up if you weren't there.
Who do you like in the Super Bowl? Jags.
No, yeah, go Jags. I like the Seahawks because usually a really, really good team, which I believe they are, obviously, doesn't play poorly twice in a row. They didn't play very well against Green Bay. You wouldn't think they would come out and make the same sort of mistakes that they made to get in the hole against Green Bay twice in a row. So when they get rolling, if they get rolling early, they're tough to beat.
Yeah, it does look like a great matchup, though. It doesn't look like it's a slam dunk either way. And I think Tony and I, we talked about it very early in the week. The thing that shouldn't get lost in all this conversation, really, there's been no more talk about the Seahawks all week for the most part, other than them, you know, saying Gronkowski's not very good, is that their offense continue to put them in the worst position over and over and over again. They still, the defense basically did everything they could possibly do against an offense I think is even better in Green Bay than New England's is. Although, you know, when they've got LeGarrette Blount running, it kind of completes that offense. They've got enough weapons in the passing game. They don't have that one pure downfield threat like the Packers do with Jordy Nelson, but they've got enough to get by. Hopefully it'll be a good matchup. Hopefully it'll live up to the hype.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously you never know in the Super Bowl if one team gets up and gets rolling. Seahawks had a couple of breaks last year. All of a sudden they're up, and all of a sudden, yeah, the game got away. So you never know what's going to happen, especially when you have a defense that plays at that level. They can get in front of you and put it away quick. But you kind of doubt that would happen in this game.
On behalf of Jaguar Nation, thank you for your service from Mobile, Alabama. Great week of service, Johnny O.
Just doing my job.
We appreciate it. Follow John on Twitter at John Osher. O-E-H-S-E-R.
I like
see
that.
How I did
like
that?
I what day is today? It's in Wild
it's
West.
It's Cardinal and Cadillac Friday.
See, I'm a little out of
okay?
my element.
I know.
I'm distracted. It's, you know, it,
Logman
it's not
really,
right.
really enjoyed the Wild
oh,
West.
Oh, I can't even
imagine.
I mean, he was
he may do Mondays and Tuesdays with us.
I got
to
say, what's going on with the Tony Baselli?
Right. I just looked at it 5 minutes ago. I said, Tony, when did that get here?
Yeah.
There's a huge picture of Baselli. Looking very angry.
Yeah, just
right over my shoulder, like he's coming for me. Tony said it came in last week.
Yeah, I've got to think the story behind it is that Baselli brought it in.
Oh, where am I? Where am I?
I kind of picture his house, just pictures everywhere.
He's got a closet full of Tony, this print.
he gives them away to people.
He's got 15 closets. Each one's got a different print in there.
It was fun to see him coaching this week, by the way. That was an interesting. It was an interesting thing. I tease Tony a lot, but it was neat to see him in his element and, you know, really enjoying it. And, you know, I think eventually someday he gets in as a coach someday.
Well, when Doug Marrone leaves to take, you know, I don't mean that in a negative way. I think Doug Marrone, this is very likely what he's looking at as a stepping stone kind of year. Take a step back, thought he might get a head coaching gig right away. Go out there, do a good job, either get a coordinator level or head coaching opportunity, perhaps. Next year, who knows? Maybe sooner rather than later, we'll see Tony help
these
offensive linemen on an official basis. I don't know.
Who knows?
Never know.
Who knows?
Johnny O, good to see you, buddy.
All right, guys, thank you.
There he goes. We will miss him next week when we're out in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll come back with the fan feedback spotlight. Who do you believe? You believe Belichick, Brady, Osher? You believe all three of them? None of them? You can split it up any way you like, and actually Osher's not part of the question, but you can do whatever you like. 641-1010 if you want to get in. Final few minutes of the program coming up. On a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Joe Fortunato, the sartorial splendor of the soccer fan. What are you rocking over there? Marathon? Is that the squad?
It's a full.
Oh, that is a full.
Yeah.
Marathon. You know, it's funny because the advertisement, is that a marathon what? Marathon bar?
Bet.
Oh, bet. Remember the marathon bars? Candy bars? Oh, they're delicious. Yes, the intertwined, like the double helix chocolate caramel shape. One of the best candy bars out there. If you go to St. Augustine, if you go to St. George Street, they got a couple of candy shops where they try to stock some hard-to-find candy bars. You can find marathon bars on occasion down there. Just so you know. Now you know, Tony. You know a little bit more about where you can get your sugar fix. If you're a marathon's one of the one of my favorites as a kid. Top five as a kid, marathon bars. But he's got the marathon bet thing. I mean, you'd think it was some club called Marathon. The actual Fulham logo is about the size of my thumb, and the advertisement is dwarfing it.
That's all they do over there.
That's how they roll.
Yeah.
And one day it'll come to America too. trust. Don't you think? I mean, 100 years from now, we won't recognize. We'll be like, remember how quaint it was when put a number on a jersey?
Right. For every time that we ever ask, well, how do they do what they do and make the money they make without having commercials? There it is. The players are wearing advertisements.
Right. I mean, NASCAR is like that, obviously. Football.
They
soccer.
Still have breaks.
They do.
Like soccer.
No, I understand. But
soccer,
I mean,
they start the first half and then it's halftime.
But
and that's when
there's
start
money to be made.
Yeah.
And there is money to be made. And eventually you're going to run out of this revenue stream, that revenue stream. How can we increase more? You can only cram so many commercials into a broadcast. You can only ask so much money for them, I guess. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, as the saying goes, which I'm not really sure what the saying means. I think I know what it means. I'm not sure where it came from. I'll shut up now. And let's look at the fan feedback spotlight, Tony. It's brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida. And we asked folks, do they believe Belichick? They believe Brady? They believe both of them? Didn't have any knowledge of this? They believe neither of them? What do we get? And I know a lot of them we got were just simply, I don't care. It's funny. You would think just based on Twitter reaction that I've gotten that no one cares about Deflategate, if you'll call it, but the league certainly cares, okay? And these news organizations, we don't sit there and take a poll in the morning and say, you know, what do you think they want to talk about? We try to tailor our content to what people want to hear, but we're not taking polls. Those nightly news people, they're taking the polls all day long on their websites and stuff, and the story led the nightly news on NBC, ABC, CBS, all of them yesterday.
Yeah, led the nightly news. Kayak Fish tweeted us earlier today that he saw stories about it on both PBS with their news hour and the BBC had a story about what's going on with Deflategate. I mean, this is a massive story. I think it shows the level of interest that there is in the National Football League, but not only that, the level of interest there is in even a hint of scandal with any of these kind of things. And the fact that it's the Patriots just makes it that much juicier for the public, because for those fans who might not have known that, yes, they got caught cheating less than a decade ago, here it is again, baby. They're right back in the spotlight as far as the reaction we got on Twitter from @IrishJaguar. Like you said, representing the sentiment of many, don't care one way or the other. From Eric, of course not. They know how they want their balls to feel. Who wants deflated balls? #PureSnark. From Brian, I believe Belichick, too many other quarterbacks have stated Brady would have known. #AtLeast Bortles didn't cry. And for Duval Doom, we got Tom's preference on Tom's balls is his business is the greatest soundbite in the last 5 years. And from Tony Agolini, don't care, but I know it has to be covered because people eat it up.
They do eat it up. I mean, some people do, and I get the people who say, enough already, we don't care. The league cares. And when you hear Brian Sexton talk about how everyone in the NFL, and this, you got to understand what the Senior Bowl is. It's such the convention of the NFL. It's the off-season convention. It's like the Final Four where all the coaches go in college basketball. It's the job market. This is the equivalent to that. You've got everybody there and all these personnel people and all these reporters covering the league. And this was the thing that had them on the edge of their seat and continues to. And there's a lot of anger and mistrust and curiosity as to which direction the punishment would go. Rick Philippone, if I'm pronouncing that right, I hope I am, Rick, said Brady seemed to know exactly, and he stated 12.5 PSI, I believe is what he said, is perfect for him. He said those are the tools of the trade, and he didn't notice a difference. I find it hard to believe, too, that if you really had 2 pounds of air pressure taken out of a bullet, that you're talking about 15%. It seems significant. Seems like you would notice, but
no, it seems like you would, and it's unfortunately we're not going to be able to catch up with Mark Brunell, who's been trending on Twitter, and his comments have been all over the place.
Yeah, he told us he might be able to call in right before noon, but the timing's just not going to work out. He's
busy.
But
he talked specifically on ESPN.
Yeah,
about what kind of pressure he liked when he played, and it's listening to a guy like that who says, "Yeah, if it wasn't that, I could tell immediately." I knew and his thing was, look, this is my livelihood. The football is my livelihood. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I have what I want in that football within the rules. And I think that's why a guy like Mark Brunell is so disappointed in what he's seeing from a guy like Tom Brady, because look, I totally understand the sentiment of if you were somebody who had been in that position, and I know Brunell's taken a lot of heat from outside of Jacksonville. I've been laughing at people on message boards who are saying, well, of course he's saying that he's a former Jets quarterback, or what did Mark Brunell ever do in his career? Well, he started.
What did he ever do in his career?
Right.
What did Dan Marino ever do in his career?
Right.
What? He didn't have a Super Bowl.
You don't have to go to the Hall of Fame to be experienced at playing. He went to a couple Pro Bowls. He went to an AFC
Championship
game.
Started 151 games, as he pointed out yesterday. I couldn't have quoted you that number before yesterday. He's been to 3 Pro Bowls. He was Pro Bowl MVP. He went to 2 championship games, like you say. He did plenty
in
his
career. He certainly knows what the quarterback position entails. And for him to be so strong, you don't see players this strong about these kind of issues ever. Players don't come out this strongly. It just doesn't happen in this league. And to see somebody like Mark Brunell and even Bettis and Dawkins, who played, obviously they didn't play quarterback, but guys like Troy Aikman to come out and say, look, I flat out don't believe what Tom Brady said. I don't believe it. No quarterback in that position wouldn't be able to tell the difference. And then to hear them say that there is no ball boy on the planet that would affect the integrity of a football without checking with his quarterback first, or at least there being some line of communication from his quarterback that this is what they want, somebody's lying. And the most likely source of that lie right now seems to be Tom Brady, which, look, again, this isn't about deflated footballs. It's about the New England Patriots and their willingness to cheat.
Their willingness to cheat, or at least the perception that they're willing to cheat.
Right.
Which is based on their previous cheating.
That's so much bigger. You know, that it's so much bigger than whether or not they deflated the balls in the AFC Championship game. It's about more than that when you're talking about legacy, especially with these guys.
All right, Tony, I want to just quickly follow up on a couple of things yesterday. We were talking about the ultimate Super Bowl snack playoffs. You can vote in round two. We went through the round one winners yesterday. Go to foodspin.deadspin.com, and it's the just about the top story on there, round two of the ultimate Super Bowl snack playoffs, in the potato, cheese, corn, and nuts and such brackets. And I hope I'm pronouncing this right. I remember yesterday I was like, what is a crudite? Right? My buddy JD, who's worked in food service for a long time, says it's pronounced crudite. I'm not sure which.
Okay.
And as we found out yesterday, it's a vegetable platter. I'll have to speak to him in person to get the, I'm sure I butchered at least one of those pronunciations as well. We need a stat boy to tell us where we screwed up every day.
That's right.
I don't think we have enough time for that, actually. That does it for us stateside here. Tony and I will hop a plane for Phoenix on Sunday and bring you coverage of Super Bowl 49 live from Radio Row all next week. Frank Frangie and Rick Blue heading out there as well for 1010XL and the lovely Ms. Brooks. Lauren Brooks going to join us later on in the week, as well as our coverage comes to you from the Phoenix Convention Center all week long. So for today, thanks to Brian Sexton and John Osier, both guests and all guests appearing courtesy of the Garbrough Automotive Hot Seat. For Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime is next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.